Hearing, hearing, hearing. Wisconsin Supreme Court is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Annette Kingsland Ziegler presiding. Your silence is commanded.
All right, please be seated. Good morning. We are here for rules hearings today. We have two of them on the agenda. The first one up is 2402 in the matter of creating Wisconsin Statute 885.375 related to interpreters in municipal court proceedings. I have two presenters, Attorney White and Bondock, and then I have eight listed speakers. If there's someone who wishes to speak but you're not necessarily on the list, you're welcome to join us. Just let us know when the speakers have presented, and we can add you to that if you think they've neglected to say something that you want to add. So with that, let's proceed. The first presenter is Attorney Parker White from the Wisconsin Justice Initiative. 10 minutes. Oh, I should add, Justice Rebecca Bradley is appearing by phone today. Are you there, Justice Bradley? I just want to make sure we have a connection.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chief.
Okay. All right. With that, please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices, and may it please the Court. My name is Parker White. I'm an attorney with the law firm Foley & Lardner out of Milwaukee, and I'm here with my colleague Evan Bondock from our Madison office. We're here representing the Wisconsin Justice Initiative, or WJI, on behalf of whom we filed the petition as the focus of today's hearing. I'll briefly summarize the key points in our petition, then my colleague Evan will address some of the arguments raised for and against our petition. Under Wisconsin law, as it exists today, municipal courts are required to provide interpreters to people who can't speak English only in cases involving indigent juveniles. If a case does not involve an indigent juvenile, Wisconsin municipal courts are not required to provide interpreters, even if the defendant in the case, or an alleged victim, or a witness, is an individual with limited English proficiency. And I'll be using the term LEP individual to refer to people who have limited English proficiency. While some municipal courts nevertheless provide interpreters to LEP individuals, even though they don't have to, other municipal courts do not. This means that throughout the state of Wisconsin every week, there are court hearings involving people who may not fully understand the language being used by the court and who are therefore forced to rely on friends or family members or bystanders or police officers or members of the court staff to help interpret for them.
Do we know the extent of the problem?
We know that, for example, we know that there are LEP individuals who are appearing in municipal courts as often as every day in some courts such as Milwaukee Municipal Court. Of course, some municipal courts see very few or no LEP individuals, but other courts see many.
So we don't have actual numbers, is that correct?
We don't have, as far as we know, the exact information does not exist, which may signal part of the problem that we're not providing services to LEP individuals as municipal courts should. But if we estimate, we know that there are about 200,000 LEP individuals in the state of Wisconsin. So if we assume that the population in municipal courts is about the same as the population of Wisconsin, we could say about 3% of all cases involve LEP individuals.
I have sort of an unintended consequence question, and I'm just trying to think through this. It may be a good idea, right? I mean, it'd be good for everyone to have a lawyer. It'd be good for everyone to have an interpreter who needs it, right, or wants it. Have you thought about or have you done any studies? Do you know at all whether there would be an impact? Some might view this as kind of an unfunded mandate, right? And would there be an impact on municipal courts? Do you think that counties or jurisdictions would close their municipal courts if they have this increased expense due, and obviously if they do close, those would then shift to the circuit courts, which would just increase their caseload. But I'm wondering if there are any unintended consequences that you've thought of.
Thank you for that question, Chief Justice. We take this issue of costs seriously because we know that commenters on our petition have also raised this issue, and we know that municipal courts have closed, may close if there are exorbitant costs that are put on them. The cost increase that our petition would require, it varies between municipalities. So for many municipalities, the cost increase would be $0. These are municipalities who either see no LEP individuals in their courtroom, or it could be municipal courts who already are effectively compliant with the rules that our petition would create. So for those municipalities, the cost would be zero. For other municipal courts who are not currently compliant and who do see LEP individuals, we think the cost would be very manageable. The vast majority of instances requiring interpreters that our statute would create would be satisfied by the use of services such as LanguageLine. LanguageLine costs $1 a minute for telephonic interpretation calls, or $2 a minute for video calls. We think that the costs associated with services like that are very manageable by municipal courts.
So you're not asking one follow-up.
I'm sorry, Chief, of course.
You're not asking for human body interpreters because we already have a huge shortage. You're asking for LanguageLine?
Yes, Your Honor. The vast majority of instances requiring interpreters that our statute would create would be satisfied by LanguageLine. And actually, in no instance are we requiring municipal courts to have in-person interpreters, even for evidentiary hearings.
Why don't they just do that? Because it's not required?
Many municipal courts do use LanguageLine, but some do not. And that's the gap that we're trying to close with our proposed statute.
I have a couple of questions. So you're not asking for anyone to be certified?
We are asking, so for evidentiary hearings, we are asking, the statute proposes that municipal courts are required to use qualified interpreters for evidentiary hearings.
So in the course, in those cases then, a court would not be able to use LanguageLine?
For evidentiary hearings, that's right.
Where does a municipal court not use an evidentiary hearing?
I'm sorry?
When would a municipal court not be engaging in an evidentiary hearing? The only time I can imagine is if someone decided they were just going to come in and plead guilty to their speeding ticket.
So, for example, initial appearances or status conferences or pretrial conferences all generally would not be evidentiary hearings in our definition in the statute.
But if there is an evidentiary hearing, what percentage of the cases that are in front of muni judges, if you were out of all the hearings, what percentage are evidentiary hearings?
We think it's a very small percentage. Again, we don't have exact figures for those hearings, but we think of all the trials or other evidentiary hearings involving LEP individuals in any given municipal court, we think that number of hearings is going to be relatively low.
I think that number is really important, and I don't know what you mean by relatively low. I don't know if you mean 10, 100, 1,000, or 10,000.
Our estimate, I would roughly estimate that maybe 5% of hearings involving LEP individuals across the state would be evidentiary hearings.
What is that in raw numbers?
So in raw numbers, it would probably be, I would have to do additional estimates, but we know, for example, that in 2023, there were 450,000 cases in municipal courts across the state of Wisconsin. We know that about 80% of those, actually it's probably more than 80, but let's say 80% were resolved in default judgments. So that leaves about 20% of cases of that 450,000. That's about 90,000 cases across all municipal courts. If we assume that, as I said before, about 3% of those are involving LEP individuals, that would be about 3,000 cases per year involving LEP individuals. So that's 3,000 cases that proceed past default judgment or that have an initial appearance. Now, some of those cases might proceed to an additional non-evidentiary hearing, such as a status conference or a pretrial conference. So of those 3,000 initial appearances, we can add 1,000 secondary non-evidentiary hearings. That's 4,000 hearings. So of those 4,000 hearings, again, most of these are going to be resolved by language line. So that's non-evidentiary hearings. Language line costs, let's assume $2 a minute. Let's assume that the hearings are about 3 minutes. That's 4,000 times 2 times 3, which is $24,000. Now, of those costs, those costs are already borne, like I said before, by certain municipal courts, such as Milwaukee Municipal Court, already pays for language line, already follows that standard. And so we can cut that number in half to about $12,000. Again, these are all very rough estimates, but $12,000 shared around about 100 municipal courts in the state of Wisconsin. Those are the language line costs. Again, rough estimates. That doesn't answer your question. You asked about evidentiary hearings and trials, but I would go back to that number of 3,000 hearings that proceed to that are not default judgment, that have at least an initial appearance. Of those, I would estimate it's just, maybe, again, like 5 to 10% of those are going to have an evidentiary hearing, are going to have a trial. And so that would be, that's, by my math, that's 150 to 300.
Your mask goes on the fly are incredibly impressive. Are you sure you went to law school?
I hope someone double checked me on that. Some of those numbers.
You're right. I was doing my calculator, but you were doing it on the fly.
Can I follow up? Out of those 150 to 300, so what you're asking for is for 150 to 300 cases, it's not just the defendant, right? So it would be an interpreter for any witness, victim, and I'm going to, I think it was in your submission, I'm going to just poke the term alleged victims. We don't have alleged victims in Wisconsin. A victim is a victim. Under Chapter 950, the definition is a person who has been the victim of a crime. There's no alleged victim. Either you are or you aren't. There's no burden of proof that's associated with it. Putting that aside. But for any one of these hearings, it would require more than one could involve more than one interpreter, because if you have a witness, if you have a defendant, if you have a victim, it becomes very, very difficult for an interpreter to interpret for all of those people in a court trial, for instance.
Yes, Your Honor, that could be right. There could be more than one interpreter for any given evidentiary hearing. That's right.
Okay, so the 150 to 300 doesn't mean we would just need 150 to 300 interpreters. I'm not saying individual, but interpreters available. It could be more than that.
It could be more than that. And again, these are rough numbers, and that's 150 to 300 evidentiary hearings spread throughout all municipal courts throughout an entire year. But yes, each of those could require more than one interpreter.
All right, but those numbers are just based on your estimates and kind of your guesswork here. They're not real hard numbers, correct?
That's correct. Some of those numbers that I said, I mean, I think they're based in reality. There were about 450,000 cases in municipal courts throughout the state in 2023. That's confirmed. And we know that roughly it's something like 83% of those cases are default judgment cases. But besides that, I was doing a bit of estimating in my analysis.
And you think that you can get interpreters in this state if you pay them $10 for half a day?
No, Your Honor. So we reference that $10 amount because that's currently what the statute says. That's the required, it may be a minimum payment. But we know that for evidentiary hearings, cost per hour for a qualified interpreter would be more than that.
Way more.
Yes, Your Honor. Based on our research, I think it would be about $40 to $80 per hour for a qualified interpreter, or maybe $300 per a half day for a qualified interpreter. But this varies from interpreter to interpreter. They each have their own costs. I see that I'm out of time. Would it be okay if I quickly summarize the rest of my argument or not?
Sure.
Thank you. So really what our petition aims to do is to bring the rule on interpreters in municipal courts into line with the rule on interpreters in circuit and appellate courts. So 88538, Wisconsin Statute 88538, currently requires circuit courts and appellate courts to provide interpreters to all LEP individuals at all court hearings.
I don't want to interrupt your summary, but as you're talking about circuit courts and appellate courts, and I'm not sure about the need for use of interpreters in an appellate court proceeding. I haven't seen one in here since I've been on the court, but be that as it may, not to state the obvious, but we have a crisis right now in the state when it comes to interpreters, right? And so my concern is that if you have someone who is facing a felony, or you are a victim of a sexual assault and you need an interpreter in a circuit court room, should we be triaging interpreters in this state based on the severity of the crime? I think that's what the legislature has done. It would be great if we had interpreters for everyone who needs them. It would be great if we had enough court reporters in this state, right? It would be nice if we had enough public defenders and district attorneys. That just isn't the reality, and so oftentimes we as a system, a court system, are faced to make very, very difficult decisions based on limited resources. And I'm not sure what to do about the fact that we don't have enough qualified court interpreters in the system right now. And what you're asking for is going to spread those even the number we have even thinner than currently.
Thank you for raising that issue. The interpreter shortage is an important issue, and we believe our statute recognizes that and accommodates that. So, again, the vast majority of instances in which that would require an interpreter that our statute would create would be resolved by or satisfied by languages such as by services such as LanguageLine. In that respect, our statute would not put any additional strain on interpreter resources in Wisconsin. I would add that I hear the point about triaging and how allegations or some sentences might be more important than others, perhaps, or some courts might be more important than others. But municipal courts are real courts, and they have real consequences for real people. So there are real monetary fines that are there are real fines that defendants in municipal courts have to pay. If they don't pay them, their driver's license can be suspended. They can go to jail. So there are serious due process concerns on the line, even in municipal courts, and especially in municipal courts, because there are so many Wisconsinites who are in these courts.
So is it your position that a defendant in a municipal court has a due process right under the Constitution to an interpreter?
Yes.
And do you have any citations for that?
I believe we provide the citations in our filings. But I believe under the Wisconsin Constitution, among other things, that any defendant in a municipal court has a right to due process, especially if their personal liberty is at stake. And I'll wrap up there. And my colleague, Mr. Evan Bondock, will continue our argument.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Attorney Bondock?
Thank you, Parker. Good morning, Justices, and may it please the Court.
Let me just halt you for one second. What time is it? Justice Bradley, it's entirely possible that your phone is not on mute. Did you intend to ask a question right out of the box?
Thank you, Chief Justice. My phone has been on mute, but now my grandmother clock is sounding. It's chime, so I will defer my question. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Referring to the grandmother clock. All right. Please proceed.
Thank you. I first want to acknowledge and thank every interested party who submitted comments to our petition. Whether those parties support or oppose our petition as written, I think it is clear that all parties agree that LEP individuals must have the right to meaningfully participate in the legal proceedings in which they are involved. So I'd like to take this time to just address some of the comments and concerns that we received, as well as to reiterate a few key points from the substance of our petition. I'm hoping you don't ask me to do as much math, not quite the same level as Parker. As far as the issue of costs, my colleague Parker touched on this, but it's our position that municipal courts are real courts with real consequences, and these decisions that they issue involve individuals that can affect them for a long-lasting time and have negative effects on their life.
I have a question about language line, because it seems to me of what you're asking us, that is the least difficult thing to use. I've used it before when I was in circuit court. It's very cost efficient. They have lots of languages. So my question is, I have a couple questions. One is, do we have a sense of whether it's being used by municipalities? Like, this is that piece of what you're asking us to do a solution in search of a problem?
Thank you, Justice Ellett. I think some municipal court judges we have discussed with are using it. They think it's, like I said, very easy to use and accessible. Our concern is that we want to close the gap to those judges that are not using it. This is where they're using some other sort of service, whether it be, like we mentioned, a family member or something more along the lines of a Google Translate, something that we don't think is sufficient to cover the needs and cross the language
barrier. Okay, so my other question related to that then, if you couldn't achieve everything you wanted to achieve with this petition because of some of the things Justice Kroski was talking about, which I think are of concern to all of us, which is this real lack of interpreters. We're just struggling in the courts right now, and to put something else on top of that seems a very difficult task at this point in time. But if there were a way to encourage municipal courts to use language line when possible instead of family members, is there some aspect of your petition that could be accomplished?
We certainly think so. Just referencing the statute here, I mean, we allow for the flexibility to use services exactly like language line in all non-evidentiary hearings. So any proceeding that would not require the testimony of live witnesses would not require a qualified interpreter. And so our push was to get language line in those instances when it's currently not being utilized. So I think it certainly allows for that.
I drove from the Wausau. I live in the Wausau area, north of Wausau. And Marathon County has a lot of small municipal courts. My concern focuses in part on the western part of the county. Abbotsford, 50% of the public school children in Abbotsford, Wisconsin, 50% come from homes where English is not the primary language, right? A lot of agriculture there, meatpacking, et cetera. And so someone's picked up, let's say, for operating without a license, which is kind of a common arrest in that area. And that, of course, can lead to, eventually, as you get into this progressive hole, to being picked up and then ending up in jail. So I have great concern for all of the state, but I bring an experience, both having spent being familiar with municipal court, and that experience. So how does your petition advance municipal court in Abbotsford or Athens or Edgar or Stratford, all in the western part of the county?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for raising that, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I think, we really tried to emphasize in this that, municipal courts like our legitimate courts, and they have real consequences, like you said, and, you know, can lead to an initial citation that leads someone down the wrong path. And we think that, you know, the costs of this, while they may be higher in some municipalities that have a higher LEP population, we think they're necessary costs of operating the court that has these sort of consequences and that can lead people down this path. And even in, you know, higher LEP individual counties, we think that these costs will not be overwhelming, especially because, as my colleague mentioned, the majority of these proceedings are non-evidentiary, and so they allow for these cost-effective services in the majority of cases. Just to touch briefly on the comments regarding how this would not be accompanied by a funding provision, I think as many of you have raised, we don't believe this should be a limiting factor in the court's adoption of the rule change. You know, there's several examples of the legislature passing provisions mandating certain changes, specifically in municipal courts. As an example, 2009 Wisconsin Act 402 added a specific requirement that municipalities cover the cost of providing a guardian ad litem. And this act also formalized the municipal court system in a number of ways by requiring separate
I just want to stop there. I'm glad that you brought up the legislature here. Why isn't this a job for the legislature instead of us?
Certainly. So I think that we think, first of all, that this is firmly within the court's statutory authority to do so, to regulate pleading practice and procedure in all of the courts. And then second, when this court, in the case of the Nevey case, first determined that an LEP criminal defendant was entitled to an interpreter, it did so as a matter of fairness and sound judicial administration. And kind of like we touched on before, you know, these are real courts with real consequences, and we believe that this court should exercise its administrative powers and implement this change. Some concerns have been raised about...
Counsel, can I interrupt you?
Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure everyone could hear me. I don't want to leave the topic of whether this is the proper role for the legislature or this court to legislate in this area. It shouldn't go unmentioned, and I'm sure you're aware of it, that the legislature did, in fact, legislate in this area with respect to the specific statute that you're asking us to amend. It did so in 2001, and it did so in 2007. So I have two questions for you. One, have you gone to the legislature to ask for this change to be made? Because they do, after all, have the power of the purse. And my second question is, have you considered the separation of powers ramifications of this court amending a statute where the legislature has already made the policy choices that you're asking this court to now alter?
Thank you for the question, Justice Bradley. We have not gone to the legislature and discussed it with them. One of our reasons is that, you know, you mentioned the power of the purse, you know, kind of as I just mentioned, there is no guarantee that even if the legislature were to make this change, that they would accompany it with any sort of funding. And then as to your second question regarding separation of powers, we realize that the legislature has made some changes in this area, but we don't think that there are any conflicting issues here because the court actually in the statute specifically amended by the legislature, they provided that this court have superintending authority over all courts, specifically the municipal court. So we think it's well within this court's right to make a rule change here.
I hate to extend your red light, but if you think the legislature won't guarantee funding, what do you think this court can do with respect to funding?
We're not asking this court to provide any funding here. We think that the rule change, as we've written it, allows for the flexibility where municipalities are able to bear these costs, and we don't think they'll be overwhelming for them. So we're just asking that this court implement the change and that the municipalities will have implemented on their own.
unfunded mandate.
That's certainly one way to put it, and we realize there is no funding associated with it. But you know, I'll go back to just the idea that you know these are important proceedings with real consequences that we believe should not go unnoticed, and that it's just part of the operation of a court system, and specifically with a municipal court. That's they just need to provide interpreters for these individuals as part of their operations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Senior staff attorney of the ACLU, Attorney Muth.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Timothy Muth. I'm a senior staff attorney at the ACLU of Wisconsin. Thank you for this opportunity to present our comments on the rule. The ACLU of Wisconsin strongly supports the petition to provide interpreters in all substantive municipal court proceedings. It was 25 years ago next month that former Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson stated in her State of the Judiciary report that there can be no justice if a person cannot understand the court proceedings and if accurate interpreting is not available. And that common sense principle that a defendant in court needs to be able to understand the proceedings, needs to be able to communicate, needs to be able to hear the testimony and the evidence that is presented was recognized by this court in 1984 in State versus Neve, which became the basis for sections 885.37 and 885.38. It is truly a question of fundamental fairness and due process. So the question should be asked, should Wisconsin maintain an exception that it is for matters in municipal courts that we do not provide interpreters for adults? We require interpreters in our circuit courts, in our appellate courts, for juveniles in municipal courts, yet the state continues to have this exception for other municipal court proceedings, and that is what the petition seeks to address. Yes, Justice.
I'm just going to ask you just to pause for a second.
Yeah.
I fear that what you're doing here is you are putting us in a bit of a box, perhaps unintentionally, but no one disagrees with what you're saying. I don't mean to speak for the rest of my six other colleagues up here, but I will just say, and the one who's not with us, but we can hear. I don't think any of us think that it wouldn't be terrific, important, the most fair, the most justice would be best served, the most equitable, if everyone who needed an interpreter in our court system was able to receive the help of an interpreter. I mean, we all agree with the words, I think, I'll be shocked if we're not, with the words that you just said. We don't live in a perfect world, though. We live in a world of limited resources, and the problem I see with this petition is just a almost complete and total failure to appreciate that. And I'm going to, for everyone who comes up and talks, I'm afraid I'm going to be saying the same thing and asking the same questions. We have limited resources. They are canceling homicide trials in Milwaukee County because they do not have interpreters. Right? Justice Amos Bradley is right. To someone who is facing losing their driver's license and then that is going to set them into a spiral where they may eventually lose their personal liberty, do they deserve an interpreter? Yes, absolutely. But I don't know what to do about the fact that resources are limited, and I think it's unfair for us to be sort of put in this box that if we don't vote for this, we don't care about those individuals who are in municipal court, because that is not true. The problem here and the answer that I'm so far haven't gotten is what do we do about the limited resources that our system is facing right now?
And I think, Justice Kropsky, the part of the response to that is to start with where you started your question, which is that this is fundamental and important. that and a person's ability to understand, especially in our municipal courts, where one might say that the reason there's an exception was a lack of appreciation of the possible significance of municipal court
actions. Take that off the table.
Take
that off the table. Assume that that's not the reason for the purposes of today, at least as far as I'm concerned, that people in municipal courts do not have defendants. Take that off the table. Okay? What do we do with the fact that we have a fundamental lack of resources when it comes to interpreters?
And my response would be is we don't say that there is not a right, that there is not an important provision that interpreters need to be provided, but that instead that the lack of interpreters is worked on, not eliminating a requirement that there be interpreters.
And how do you and all of your friends who are advocating for this rule suggest that we address the lack of interpreters?
That is something, respectfully, Your Honor, that the state of Wisconsin, that the legislature and the court system should work on making sure that a fundamental right, a fundamental issue of due process is funded and addressed, but it is not accomplished by saying there is no right for someone to be able to understand the proceedings that may affect their job, their ability to get housing, that in municipal court may be able to lead to a commitment for failure to pay. I do see my time's up, but
I'm
happy to
take. I have a question,
too,
if that's all right.
Go ahead.
I hear you saying it's the state's responsibility. I think we're in a nationwide crisis with respect to court interpreters. And so my question for you is, do you have any, and you may not know the answer, do you know what other states are doing in this regard? Are they mandating court interpreters for municipal courts? Because I don't think that's the case, but maybe that is. Because that's really, you're not asking us not to give it, you're asking us to mandate it.
I don't have a sense of that, Your Honor. My sense, I do have a sense, and my sense is that it is not the majority practice across the country. But I do not have statistics or data on that.
Thank you.
Counsel, do you have any case precedent that establishes a due process right to court reporters in civil proceedings in municipal courts?
Justice Bradley, I do not, although I would note that, you know, really that was, this court did not need to get to that after the adoption of the state statutes, but it has not been, brought in front of this court, and I'm unaware of one elsewhere in the country.
Don't you think it would be best for the court to fully consider a monumental issue such as whether somebody's due process rights are being violated in the context of a contested case where we have briefing and oral argument? It would be, to me, I think, an astonishing thing for this court to declare without having the benefit of argument on both sides in the context of a case proceeding. It would be an astonishing thing for this court to just declare, because it sounds good, that there's a due process right at stake here.
I would conclude in answering you, Justice Bradley, that this court has the ability to make sure that case doesn't have to be brought. In the 20 months from January of 23rd to August of 2024, our office just issued a report that Municipal courts issued 18,203 warrants and 9,141 commitments in that 20-month period. So these are courts that have the ability, and 30% of municipal courts use this power to take away persons' liberty interests. And given that power and given the fact that that happens in municipal courts across the state, the due process implications and the need to have interpreters is paramount in our view. I thank the court for the opportunity to address you this morning.
Thank you. Attorney Lund from Legal Action of Wisconsin.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Susan Lund, and I'm an attorney at Legal Action of Wisconsin, a nonprofit legal aid firm. I've practiced regularly in municipal courts throughout Wisconsin for over a decade, and I do this work because municipal court convictions and the debt associated with them create barriers to education, housing, and employment for the people I serve. In my work, I often help clients resolve driver's license suspensions and warrants caused by poverty. Despite studies showing that non-payment-based driver's license suspensions and warrants are counterproductive, costly to enforce, disproportionately impact people of color, and disproportionately impact those experiencing poverty, many municipal court judges in Wisconsin continue to use them to attempt to coerce payment of overdue citation debt. For example, in 2022, Milwaukee Municipal Court alone ordered over 30,000 non-payment-based driver's license suspensions and over...
So you're both using these numbers for you, but they also work against you, right? We talked about numbers with Mr. White, and so far... We just heard, I think, the number 80,000 thrown out. Now you're throwing out 30,000. I think your point is to show us that these numbers are huge, but we've already discerned that the number that we're talking about really is close to 150 to 300. And so which is it? Like, is this going to be super costly because it's going to impact 30,000 people, 80,000 people, or are we looking at 150 to 300 evidentiary hearings where we need an interpreter?
Well, if we look at the 30,000 non-payment-based driver's license suspensions that I referenced in Milwaukee Municipal Court, many of those cases resulted from default judgment where no appearance was ever made, and then the computer system automatically shot out a driver's license suspension. So
would an interpreter have helped in those cases?
If the person comes in for a post-judgment hearing where they're trying to resolve a driver's license suspension caused by poverty, an interpreter would
certainly... how many cases would that be?
I don't have numbers for that, but my practice involves a lot of post-judgment hearings.
Do you have a rough percentage of the 30,000 that you're talking about? What is the percentage of those that would require an interpreter if they came back? You're telling me a high number of those default. Mm-hmm. And I'm not arguing with you that it's not a problem. It is a problem, but I'm trying to get a handle on the numbers here, and you're throwing out big numbers, and I don't know if those big numbers represent the issue that we're talking about here, which is who needs an interpreter out of those 30,000?
Right, and this is not tracked, right? We don't know exactly how many LEP individuals are appearing in municipal court. There's no statewide statistics indicating how many post-judgment poverty hearings are held. But I would say that in a recent case, it seemed as though there were about 30 post-judgment poverty hearings in Milwaukee Municipal Court, the largest municipal court by far in the state. And so, again, a small percentage of those people will be LEP people. But in the instance that they're showing up to resolve a driver's license suspension or a warrant caused by poverty, it would be incredibly important that they understand the proceedings.
So and tell me what happened. Let me ask one follow-up. I just want to know, so if someone shows up for one of these hearings in Milwaukee, it's one of these 30 people who show up, what happens?
In Milwaukee Municipal Court, they do provide an interpreter, right? I believe they use language line if they don't have staff in place. So Milwaukee Municipal Court, my understanding, is already generally in compliance with what this court is requiring. But to give an example from a different case I witnessed in a different municipal court in Milwaukee County. I was once waiting for my own hearing, and the judge couldn't communicate with an LEP defendant who had shown up for a poverty hearing to avoid a warrant and incarceration due to nonpayment. So she showed up. The judge didn't have an interpreter. He solicited an interpreter from the other defendants waiting for their own hearings. He didn't indicate that he was qualified to do that. He just said he spoke some Spanish.
And okay, so but if we're going to use language lines, language line doesn't necessarily, no one's certified necessarily on language line. They're not certified to be a court interpreter.
Well, they don't necessarily have to be a certified court interpreter, but it's certainly better than having, you know, a defendant who may not be fluent, who just says they can speak some Spanish, and who may not be disinterested, especially in the case of a family member.
We have one instance of this that you know about. I'm just trying to get an understanding for the numbers here before you stand up and say it's 30,000. It's really not. So far, I've heard about one. And I'm sure it is happening around the state, but it's hard for me to sit up here and to have a handle on how big this problem is, how expensive this is going to be, when we just don't have the numbers, is my point.
Certainly. I understand that we don't have the statewide numbers. Again, I think their study showed and my experience has shown that a lot of municipal courts do what is asked and that there are efficiency savings from the court when they're not trying to navigate with an unqualified interpreter, a friend or family member, Google Translate or something like that. I think there are efficiency savings. And I think to your question of, you know, our legal punishment systems are stretched past their breaking point. If we don't have enough interpreters, if we don't have enough attorneys, if we don't have enough prosecutors, if we don't have enough jail space, if we don't have enough corrections, I think the question is, in an era of many call mass criminalization, right, in the United States, which is an outlier in the world, are we looking at legal punishment systems as a solution where, you know, we ought to be looking at other solutions? And so if we cannot meet basic fairness requirements in these court systems, perhaps we are not utilizing them correctly.
Going back to your language, I want to just flesh this out just a little bit more about what your experience is. And Language Line, my understanding, has an ASTM certification, so, you know, there is a certified aspect to it. Are the people that you are having come in post-judgment, is Language Line something that can solve that issue, or are you saying that these evidentiary hearings that you need an actual court interpreter appearing in some form?
Well, I think many of them would not be considered evidentiary hearings in municipal court. I think the standard in municipal court for whether something is an evidentiary hearing tends to be whether somebody has been sworn under oath. Sometimes a poverty hearing proceeds that way, where they swear someone under oath and they do a detailed investigation. But there's also a strict criteria in our statutes that say, if you qualify for mean-tested public assistance, food stamps, badger care, if you qualify for a free legal representative from the public defender or legal action, the court is required to make a finding of poverty. So in those circumstances, it doesn't necessarily need to be an evidentiary hearing.
So these people coming in who have had their driver's license taken away by the computer system, they can conceivably get to understand the proceeding through Language Line.
Yes, I think in the case where it's not a full-blown evidentiary post-judgment hearing, certainly they could get the necessary solution using a relatively short proceeding.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Director Megan Lee from Judicare, you're next.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices, and may it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of Judicare Legal Aid. We provide free legal help to Northern Wisconsin and Native Americans statewide. Our service area is almost entirely rural, as Justice Ann Welsh Bradley is aware, including Marathon County, and our clients face significant barriers accessing critical services and resources. So I understand that the court is, you know, very aware of how important municipal court proceedings can be and that that can have sort of resounding impacts on people's lives. I did just want to acknowledge what we have seen in our practice using Language Line and virtual kind of interpreter services and how that has helped our clients significantly. So in Marathon County, for example, oftentimes we have to bring in Hmong interpreters through Minnesota. So that is someone appearing by Zoom to interpret for hearings, including evidentiary hearings. But oftentimes in our practice, we are able to use Language Line to communicate with our clients when we do have language barriers. In our service area, Hmong and Spanish are definitely the top languages that we see being used by our clients. I did want to share an example of what we saw last week in one of our court cases where a pro se tenant was asked if they contested the eviction. They said that they didn't understand, and the judge told them that, you know, if you contest it, the eviction, which didn't help the client very much. However, I then put that through Google Translate to try to get a sense of what that would do for a Hmong client if it was used as sort of the interpretation service rather than Language Line or a qualified interpreter. Google Translate changed do you contest the eviction to do you race to escape, which is incredibly unhelpful for a person who does not understand English and has limited English proficiency to try to make sense of what
this was. An eviction in municipal court?
No, apologies, not in municipal court, but just wanted to kind of provide an example of how the legal terminology that exists in our court system isn't always understood by a layperson who has only English as their primary language, but can be very easily misunderstood or misinterpreted into other languages.
Do you think this might create less flexibility for municipal court judges to use the other people who might be in court or other options they might have at their disposal if we require them to do certain things?
Yes, but I think that that could actually be a benefit. I've seen with my own clients, I am an attorney, even though I'm our communications director now, when we have had to use family members, things often get lost in translation. So we've been very fortunate to have staff members that are fluent in Hmong, but they are having to then correct a family member who's trying to also communicate with our client. So I think that removing that from family or a random person in the courtroom, another defendant who may not have a full understanding of the process themselves, at least having somebody who has more qualifications, even if it's not as a certified court interpreter, would be incredibly beneficial, even if that is just Language Line. That would be hugely beneficial for those clients. So this has already been mentioned quite a bit, but I just want to reiterate that this is particularly important in rural communities, where we see oftentimes if our clients are losing their driver's license, that means that they are absolutely making the choice to just drive with a suspended license because that is the only way that they can get to work, get their kids to school, get groceries, or do any of the basic things that they need to do because we live in an area where public transportation does not exist or is very rare in northern Wisconsin. So I just wanted to reiterate that qualified interpreters or Language Line having an alternative resource other than family members who sometimes that's even their child who should not be put in that position to interpret for their parent, having an alternative option would be incredibly beneficial for those navigating municipal court to really ensure that those misunderstandings about what is happening and what those proceedings mean for them practically, that those are reduced significantly. So we really urge the court to adopt this petition and offer some alternative for these courts to be able to provide an element of kind of official interpretation.
I just wondered, I'm just curious, and I know I'm stuck on Language Line, but I am. Is it your experience that it's not being used in courts? Like if you were to say, you know, I need it or I'd like it, are there actually judges, municipal judges, that are not using it because they don't know about it or because they refuse to use it?
So I can't speak to that specifically in municipal court. I have seen in other courts that that is a hesitation to use those resources. I think I see that my time is up. Can I finish?
Go ahead and finish your answer.
So what we have often seen is efficiency being preferred over what would be best for the unrepresented litigants in cases. And I don't know that that is necessarily the right priority, and having a mandate in the form of this rule would really help kind of reduce that discretionary choice.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. Municipal Judges Association, Judge, is it Barissi Rudin?
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices. May it please the Court. I'm Felice Borisi Rudin, Municipal Judge for the Village of Sherwood Hills and President of the Wisconsin Municipal Judges Association, WMJA. I am speaking on behalf of the WMJA and its Legislative Committee, which is co-chaired by the Honorable Jason Hansen and Honorable Richard Jankowski, who are also in this room. We have filed our opposition to Rule Petition 2402 and have included in it our proposed amendments. We agree with two of the major premises of the petition, namely that it is vitally important that our municipal courts, like the higher courts, make substantial efforts to ensure that individuals with limited English proficiency have meaningful access to the courts. We also agree that it is appropriate to distinguish municipal courts from administrative agencies, acknowledging that our state's municipal courts are part of our unified court system as recognized in our state constitution and statutes. I do want to interject here that the municipal court system was designed to make justice accessible and speedy for people who are facing non-criminal ordinance violations. So it's significant that we're not dealing with crimes, and we're not dealing with small claims. We are only dealing with ordinance violations. We are not courts of record, and all the municipal court decisions are appealable to circuit court. But municipal courts handle many of the most common minor offenses, primarily traffic offenses, and we get many people for whom this is their first and possibly only experience with the court system, including many immigrants. We want to ensure that they are treated fairly with respect, but to do that, we need to be able to use whatever qualified interpreter resources we can efficiently access without significant expense. And currently, that may require a telephone service. We've been talking about Language Line as one example, but there are others, or even eventually the capacity to use AI interpretation. However, we are very concerned that the unfunded mandate that would be created by WJI's petition could be the stone that breaks the back of our municipal court system. The petition would create a rule for which there is no existing funding mechanism, in contrast to the circuit court interpreter requirements that were passed by the legislature and included both a statutory appropriation and scheme for reimbursement by the state to each county, at least in part. Some of our municipal courts are already facing the risk of elimination as municipalities seek cost-cutting measures. And in those communities, additional costs for interpreters could tip the balance against continuation of the municipal court. So that subminimum $10 per half day wage that was cited is not realistic. A recent article indicated that the Milwaukee County pays full-time interpreters $26 to $30 per hour plus benefits, and contract interpreters $50 to $60 per hour, but still is struggling despite that to locate interpreters. Anecdotally, my court is paying over $40 an hour to use the Language Line court interpreter by telephone, as well as $25 per hour for an assistant court clerk who doubles as our Spanish language interpreter.
So I just want to make sure, it costs $40 an hour for you to use Language Line?
Yeah, more than that.
More than that? And is that for any language?
I think my court clerk was not able to give me the exact amount because it seems to vary based on language. And in fact, at initial appearances last week, I had the problem that a gentleman came in who spoke Tajik, and only Tajik, no English. I mean, he said, Tajik, he said, brother, and he held up his phone. We tried to get Language Line, they didn't have Tajik. Our court officer tried to get a different telephone language service. They had Russian, but that wouldn't do. We had to allow him to get his brother on the phone in order to just set up the arrangements that he could plead not guilty and move on to a pretrial conference. Okay? So not even Language Line meets the needs, but presumably there will be, with AI, eventually the ability to meet language. We have many languages in this country. And while Spanish is the, you know, the most common non-English language, and we do have a Spanish-speaking interpreter in our court, that person's not needed very often. I'm sorry, I'm at red here, but I have more to say. May I proceed?
You may.
Okay. The Director of State Courts outlined in the most recent version of the Language Access Plan, dated October 2024, that there are already scarcities of qualified legal interpreters in Wisconsin, limited testing options for interpreters willing to get certified, and the National Center for State Courts only maintains oral certification exams for 18 languages.
You may not know the answer to this, but what concerns me is WJI surveyed the municipal judges across the state, and my understanding is that only 49 of the 232 currently serving municipal court judges responded to the survey. And that would represent 21% of the municipal court judges' perspectives. Do you know why that would be? I mean, I don't know whether or not the survey was onerous, whether the turnaround time was too short, or whether or not the municipal judges don't think this is a problem. Do you have any insight into that?
Typically with a survey, you'll get about 20% response with most surveys. If you get more than 20%, you're getting an excellent response rate. So I don't think it was a lack of interest. I'm not sure how the survey was done. It was not, to the best of my knowledge, something that was sent to all courts or sent in a way that all courts could easily access. I do know that not all courts use our listserv, and there's also turnover with courts, so that if a judge is emailed who's no longer the judge, the next judge might not get it. So I can't guess why. But what I could say is that this is incredibly important to municipal judges. We have regular annual trainings where we teach about interpreters. We've had state interpreters come and speak to municipal judges. And the Wisconsin statute section 885.37 provides municipal courts not only with the requirement to furnish an interpreter for a child or their parent, yeah, but also the ability to furnish an interpreter for anyone who needs that for language purposes, and also sets the onus that while the court may require someone who can afford to pay for the interpreter to pay for it, if the person cannot afford, then the court is required to pay for that interpreter service. So it's not that we don't provide interpreters. It's that frequently there are people who could afford to pay for an interpreter who would rather use their spouse or relative than have to pay out of pocket. And a lot of courts may honor that choice. It could be taken as an official waiver, but sometimes, there are some courts that use a less formal way of dealing with it.
So hang on a sec. I just want to make sure I understand. So if you were in a court and someone came in and you offered Language Line, there's courts that would actually charge the individual for that?
The courts currently, as the law is set up, have the right to charge a person who can afford to pay. My court does not, but that is in the statute.
No, I understand that they can. I'm wondering about what they do. Do they seriously go through like some kind of analysis of how much money they make and then decide whether to charge them for the service?
I think that it happens more that if a person wants an interpreter, there are some courts that will say you're going to have to pay for the interpreter and arrange for it, and then if the person says I can't afford it, then they, you know, so.
Chief, I know that her red light's on. I'm just wondering if we could ask her to distill what the WMJA's proposal is.
Right.
Before she sits down, please.
Yep. Yes.
Good idea.
So our first recommendation would be that the petition is denied and that instead our association and other interested parties work together to craft a proposed legislation that would include a funding mechanism. I think that's really essential, that there be money behind this if it was going to go forward. In the alternative, should a version of this petition be granted, we request that it includes our proposed amendments and that 2 years from the date of adoption be allowed before the rule becomes effective to allow interested parties to explore options for funding municipal court interpreters. The key aspects are of our proposal are to provide a definition of interpretation service that includes any agency or service or computer program that would provide a similar level of competence as a qualified interpreter, to remove the proposed exception in the proposed 885.375 sub 1 sub D that would define qualified interpreter differently for proceedings or matters other than in an evidentiary hearing. We read this exception to imply that the telephonic, video, or computerized services would not be permitted for evidentiary hearings. However, many municipal courts are in remote locations without easy access to in-person interpreters. And also, like I said, we get requests for interpreters in many different languages. The Tajik was one example. So it is essential to allow telephonic, video or approved computerized services, not just for non-evidentiary hearings, but also for evidentiary hearings. We'd like the petition to have removed the reference for fee appropriation pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 780 sub 2 sub GC, as that reference is specific to a legislatively determined appropriation for circuit and appellate courts. Remove the reference to Wisconsin Statute Section 814.67 for the fees for municipal court interpreters, as that is well below the minimum wage. And further, we propose that Section 814.671A be modified to no longer apply to appearances before municipal judges. We also propose needed exceptions to the qualified interpreter requirement that are essential to allow the timely operation of municipal courts when one cannot be obtained in any way, such as, for example, when we were not able to even get through language line, a Tajik interpreter, and provide language to allow the court to recoup the expense of providing a qualified interpreter if the person misrepresented their need or failed to appear to a scheduled court proceeding for which the qualified interpreter was appointed or otherwise engaged in intentional misconduct to waste the time and effort of the interpreter. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next, we have someone from the Wisconsin Hispanic Lawyers Association, Nancy Cruz.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices, and may it please the Court. My name is Nancy Cruz, and I'm an attorney with Perkins Coie, appearing on behalf of the Wisconsin Hispanic Lawyers Association to express our strong support for this petition.
To be clear, it didn't say you're an attorney on my sheet.
Oh, is it?
So
yeah.
I didn't
That's
make
okay.
anything to, if I get your name wrong, if
That's
I
okay.
say something wrong, there's no ill intent that's coming from me to you or anyone else in the courtroom. So
That's okay.
Please
no.
Excuse me in advance and now after.
Sure, no worries. As detailed in our written statement of support, WALA's mission includes advocating on issues important to the Hispanic and Latinx communities, and we believe the adoption of Rule Petition 2402 aligns with our mission by enabling limited English proficiency individuals, including those in our communities, to meaningfully participate in their legal proceedings. I was prepared to provide a few examples of specific instances in municipal courts where interpreters were needed, but I think all of my peers here today have covered many of those examples. So instead, I want to acknowledge the justice's frustration with, which is likely shared by most of us in this room, over the limited resources available in judicial proceedings, not only on an interpreter basis, but also for Spanish-speaking attorneys, which we recognize as an organization is a serious issue. And I want to, you know, describe a little bit about our organization's efforts in providing opportunities and creating programs in partnership with organizations such as Centro Hispano and the Latino Academy, which hopefully we'll be able to partner with soon, to provide the necessary training. First, we've started talking about paralegals, but now we're hoping to expand that to certifications for legal interpreters, recognizing that there are very limited individuals in this state who are able to speak Spanish or any, you know, language other than English and provide these services. Although this may not resolve the question about where the funding will come from, which I recognize is an important question, I do want to assure the court that we are trying to find ways to provide the requisite trainings for to be able to provide, you know, have individuals to serve these roles. And if this court recognizes that interpretation is a right in these proceedings, that will not, that will really support, you know, the efforts that we are trying to make. And I want to also, as you know, on a personal level, as being the family member that provided this type of interpretation to my parents as a, you know, first generation American, I do want to express the importance of having someone that actually knows, you know, what is being discussed in a legal proceeding. As many of us as children, and even, you know, before I had the privilege of going to law school and now being an attorney, didn't quite understand what it was that we were, you know, interpreting for our family. So it is a significant need, and it is important that, you know, and I know that you all recognize this, that we have people who can provide those services. And as it was noted in our letter of support, Spanish is one of the most widely spoken languages among Wisconsin residents. Many WALLO members, including myself, as I just mentioned, understand these challenges firsthand. And litigants, we believe that litigants should not have to rely on friends or family members for translation services when their legal rights are at stake. So to ensure the procedural fairness, we hope that you will grant this petition and support our efforts in trying to make sure that people have access to justice. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. I'll do the best I can on the next name. Executive Director of the Wisconsin Muslim Civic Alliance, Faja Qureshi? Is that even close?
It is close. It is actually right. It's right.
I'm trying.
Good morning, Honorable Justices. My name is Fazia Qureshi, and I am the Executive Director of... I am here today to speak in support of Rule Petition 24-02 by the Wisconsin Justice Initiative to expand interpreter services in municipal courts. WMCA advocates on behalf of the Wisconsin Muslim community across the state. Our mission is to empower and amplify the voices of the Wisconsin Muslim community and to foster a more inclusive and equitable society for all Wisconsinites. In working with the Muslim community, our organization is aware of the challenges faced by many in the immigrant and refugee communities, including barriers to navigating the legal system. The Muslim community in Wisconsin is very diverse and comes from a range of different cultural backgrounds. While many Muslim immigrants are highly educated, a significant number of Muslim immigrants and refugees have limited English proficiency, which can lead to a number of challenges for these individuals. I personally work with refugee communities and have seen firsthand the challenges they face when these individuals first immigrate. They are not always familiar with the laws and customs of the U.S., which can lead them sometimes unintentionally to commit a crime. Many defendants appear without an attorney in municipal court, already placing them at a disadvantage in the proceeding. Not understanding the English language places an additional burden on defendants with limited English proficiency. It can be incredibly difficult to navigate the legal system without an interpreter. Without qualified interpreters, individuals with limited English proficiency cannot accurately understand the charges brought against them, their rights, or how to fully defend themselves. Additionally, many defendants rely on family or friends, as already mentioned, to assist them with interpretation during a proceeding. A lot of times, these family members or friends are not familiar with legal terminology to properly interpret the proceedings. Furthermore, properly proper interpretation may be compromised because a defendant from a different cultural background may not feel comfortable fully explaining the facts of the situation to a community member that led them to be charged with a crime in municipal court. For all these reasons, we urge the court to expand access to interpreter services in Wisconsin's municipal courts. Expanding these services will ensure that the municipal court systems function in a fair and just manner for all the individuals, given that the outcome of municipal court proceedings can significantly impact the outcomes of a defendant's life. It is imperative that language interpretation be provided in municipal courts, and thank you for considering WMCA's comments regarding this matter. Thank you. Any comments?
Thank you very much. All right, next, Judge Tinkowski from Pleasant Prairie Municipal Court.
Good morning. May it please the court, Madam Chief Justice and Justices of the Court. I'm Richard Jankowski. I'm the Municipal Judge of the Village of Pleasant Prairie, and I'm also past president of the Wisconsin Municipal Judges Association. And in that role, I've traveled the state, and I'd like to, if I may, take this to a human perspective and a frontline perspective. A lot of questions have been asked about different things, and I'd like to address some of the frontline things, so please bear with me in that. Municipal courts, by the way, are not state courts, we're not criminal courts, we're not circuit courts. We're a community-based alternative to the criminal and justice and juvenile justice systems. It's a little bit different asking about whether or not you stop for a stop sign or you have a valid insurance card as opposed to a colloquy about waiving your right to refuse to testify in a criminal trial. There's a major difference in what we have to do to communicate. What we're dealing with is fundamental fairness. Judges are people too. We understand this and how we provide this. And one size does not fit all. What we need is flexibility and what we need is funding. I just want to take one personal note, and that is that in the last year and a half, I was the victim of a robbery earlier this year in Barcelona, an armed robbery. And the police found an English-speaking police officer, and they gave me my statement, the police report, and all of my rights in English, translated, with one click of a button in Microsoft Office. So that is the technology available today. When I was in an ambulance last year, and in a hospital emergency room in Paris, only one nurse spoke some English.
You shouldn't travel.
I do a lot. I just got my 2 million miles last week. But in all seriousness, Google Translate was used, as is in the common in the business world. And if it can provide medical treatment, this is what we have available. So let's talk about what I do as a judge in actually the most populous metropolitan area of the state, the Chicago-Milwaukee metropolitan area. By the way, I've never seen Foley and Lardner in 50,000 cases, and they're not in our courts. But the thing that's important about this is that we provide fundamental justice, and the judge is the gatekeeper. I have to assess a person's needs and then try to meet them, because it is fundamental fairness. I know what it's like to have the shoe on the other foot. That's why I use the examples. I do want to point out one thing, that the petitioners are aware of the cost issue, because their original draft of this proposal that they sent to me for comment included funding from the State Interpreter Fund, which was impossible because it would require legislative approval, and we don't have the money for circuit court interpreters. But I do wish to make that note. When someone comes in front of me...
Is there a figure associated with that?
I'm sorry?
I thought you were going to tell us there was some figure associated with
that. We're waiting.
I'm sorry?
What was the number?
Dollar amount.
Dollar amount? There was no dollar amount listed.
Oh.
It was open-ended. We did have discussion in the WMJA about approaching the legislature for an increase in court costs that would cover technology, education expenses, additional, and also providing additional services. So this is something that we feel should be legislatively improved. But on the ground level, if I might, if someone comes in front of me, as they do last week and every week, I do have access to certified court interpreters. I also speak some Spanish. And I can also tell you that even in the large area that I'm in, it was more difficult to find a Japanese interpreter than a Moldovan interpreter. But the vast majority are Spanish-speaking. Each community is different. The city of Waukesha, where I filled in sometimes, has a full-time Spanish interpreter because of their large population on staff. Other places are utilizing services as best as necessary. I don't use Language Line because, A, the cost, B, I have more effective resources, and C, when you have a room full of people waiting for their cases to be heard, you can't be sitting there dialing the phone and waiting to get someone online and giving you your billing information and, you know, doing everything that's going on. We have to operate a court, and we have to provide efficient but fair justice. So what do? When we assess that, because I don't like the idea of using someone who is not, I don't know what they're interpreting. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know if they're providing competent interpretation. So if we are unable to communicate successfully, what I am going to do is I am going to adjourn their case to a time when I have an interpreter, which is once a month. I have a court-certified interpreter who also happens to work for TSA and does a number of other areas and was a federal prosecutor in Argentina. So I have a very competent Spanish interpreter. But one of the things that we do is we will provide a written and oral notice, because I speak some Spanish, but we will provide a notice in writing in their language that says, we have adjourned your court date so that we can have an interpreter here to assist you. And we provide that in writing and also orally to the person. So I think, you know, we're all on the same page that we want to do the right thing. The question is, how do we make it work? And how do we fund it? Because it's an unfunded mandate. And many of our municipal courts in Wisconsin are under a lot of intense pressure and threats to judicial independence. And if I may just conclude by saying, for example, in an adjoining county to Dane County, I was at a city council meeting where they referred to the court that they eliminated as an amenity. That is how many of these municipalities are dealing with this. So we need to try to balance that. And I think the appropriate way to do that is to approach the legislature as a package and come back and say, we need to provide appropriate services, but also bear in mind that the judge is the gatekeeper in the courtroom and has to assess each case individually to determine what is necessary. And one final note is that the chief judge, when I heard the example from some other court in Milwaukee County, if I had seen that, I certainly hope that chief judges would take the appropriate steps to ensure that the judges in their jurisdiction are doing what is necessary to comply with the law and providing justice. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Skorowski, Director of State Courts, you're next.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices. Good morning to all my colleagues. And I do wish to start out by saying I did file a letter October 4th, 2024, which lays out the concerns that the Director of State Courts Office has regarding the petition before the court today. I will not belabor the letter because I know and I can see from the questions that justices you have asked thus far, some of the issues that I have raised have already been addressed this morning. I do want to point out that in the third paragraph of my letter, I did point out, and I wanted it front and center, that the language access concerns outlined here are valid and important. And I do want my colleagues here and community representatives here to know that the Director of State Courts Office is grateful to them for raising this important issue and bringing it forward, and we do agree that the need for interpreters is something that should be discussed and something that is important. At the same time, using the power of and, I must also say that from our unique perspective and the Director of State Courts Office, I have been able to witness personally the dramatic shortage in a resource that is utilized by the circuit courts regularly and that is the interpreters in this state. The interpreters in this state are in short supply. The interpreters in the state, for example, Spanish interpreters number, the number starts with a 20. You know, it vacillates a little bit, but it is a small number for the 72 counties that we have. When you are dealing with a scarce resource, I urge caution. I urge caution because when we are dealing with a scarce resource, as Justice Karofsky, I believe, already noted, there are homicide trials in the city, in the county of Milwaukee, that have had to be adjourned for lack of interpreters. This shortage is already critical and dire. So I urge caution when the court considers anything that will put additional stress on that already scarce resource. In my letter, I do point out that we need to survey the demand in more detail so that we can understand the ramifications that this will have throughout the state. We also need to drill down on the potential cost for expanding interpreter services, because that is unknown. Today you've heard that, for example, this language line, I think you've heard estimates anywhere from $2 to $40 for the cost. So that, I think, is just an example of sort of the black hole of information that we have regarding the cost for expanding these services. That is important not only in terms of the scarce resources, it is also important in terms of these municipalities who cannot plan on what they would have to expend in terms of resources in order to comply if this petition were to be granted. I also want to note that one thing that we have not discussed in detail this morning is that under this request and petition, the Director of State Courts Office would have to approve a list of agencies or other providers of interpreting services. That is something that we are not prepared to do. We believe we do not play a role in the vetting or approval of these individual vendors, and we do not have information that would assist in this regard. The Wisconsin Department of Administration does have some information like that, but as you can hear from today's discussion, for example, of language line, which continues to come up, I have not heard that anyone has contacted Language Line to assess whether they have the capacity to increase their services, whether they would consider some sort of a contract or some sort of a lowered rate given the fact that there would be an increase in usage. I mean, all of these things are just unknown. So, given the unknowns, I urge caution. It is not, again, that we disagree with the concept that has been outlined here, that these are real courts with real consequences for real people. But my mind goes to the real consequence of delaying cases, given the fact that homicide cases are being delayed. What would be the impact of delay in these municipal courts if this petition were to be granted suddenly without the assessments that we need to do to make sure that the impact is not one that, for example, creates a huge waiting time for folks in the municipal courts waiting to have interpreters for their cases.
I understand that you are knee-deep and more than that involved in the issue of interpreters in our state courts. And you stand here asking us to urge caution. So let's say I'm going to follow your direction. I'm going to be cautious. What does that mean?
Well,
given this petition,
of course.
What should I do, being cautious?
Aren't you urging us to deny it?
I believe that the wording that I used is to return the petition without action. I think that that would have the legal effect of
that means denial.
That would have the legal effect of denial. I won't.
Won't deny that.
I won't deny that. I won't deny the denial. But I do believe that, in all seriousness, the information that we are requesting is knowable. It is not difficult to assess how many municipal courts there are in this state. It is not difficult to know how many municipal judges there are in this state. So even if we start with the survey that represents only 21% of all municipal court judges, it's not hard to conclude that what must be done is an additional survey. And the survey must be done holistically so that each one of these municipal courts has the opportunity to weigh in. That's one example. So I do believe, and I mean, look at the array of community resources, private attorneys that you have here, agencies. There are folks here who could continue this conversation, who could, if this was to be denied, they could go back and attempt to get this information, and the Director of State Court's office would, of course, participate and assist in any way we could with that process.
In the days of yesteryear, this would have been something we very much or likely would have referred to the Judicial Council to have a study committee. Judicial Council, of course, then decides how they want to proceed. That is it something, as some folks here suggest, go the legislative route, or that's the beauty of the Legislative Council, or at least in the past, or is it something that should be brought before the court? They'd have a study committee, and part of the study committee would decide how best to proceed. So is referring it, and I'm not suggesting necessarily to the Judicial Council today, but referring it to some entity, is that proceeding cautiously? PPAC, for instance.
Well, I absolutely believe that that would be preferable to dropping the issue and not proceeding to drill down, as I said, into these details that we must have, I think, to make the right decisions. So I'm not opposed to that. I do sit on the Judicial Council. I do attend the Chief Judge's Committee, which is another sort of entity. I do sit on and listen to all the PPAC committees and meetings. So there are a number of different routes we could go, and I don't pretend to advise this court as to which would be the best, but I will say that I have the unique perspective of participating in every one of those entities, and it certainly is a suitable issue, and I think one could argue for each of those entities.
Do you have any opinion on the Wisconsin Municipal Judges Association proposal? Which is more cautious, I think you could say.
I listened carefully. I have read it and reviewed it carefully. I don't think we are at a point in which we could really assess the... I mean, it's like throwing a stone in a pond, and there will be ripple effects. I don't know right now the size of the stone. I don't know the size of the pond, and I don't know the size of the ripples. So when we're talking about real people and real courts, it seems to me that we owe them to actually get the information, obtain the information that is knowable before we wade in and make decisions that might have very significant impacts.
Have you studied the separation of powers issues at stake?
I did listen to the discussion about the legislature and the laws. I won't take a position on it, but I will say that, as this court knows, I have had to examine the interpreter issue. For example, the legislature previously had set a fee, an hourly rate for interpreters, which was then changed by the legislature and removed in order to give flexibility to the counties in that particular case. So given that example, it does speak to me about the interest that the legislature has in this issue, and I am not opposed to that sort of interpretation. And Justice Ann Walsh Bradley's question regarding the Judicial Council, I think, is an apt one, because the Judicial Council has the ability to reach across those the different branches of government and make recommendations.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. At the beginning of these proceedings, I mentioned that if there's someone who feels that something was not adequately
covered, you'd have the opportunity to come forward and speak if you'd like to. We are now at the end of the proceedings for 2402. Is there anyone who would like to speak at this point? Yes. Yes, absolutely. So Attorney Parker White.
Yes. Thank you, Chief Justice and Justices, for the chance to speak again, and thank you for everyone who's contributed to the discussion today. I just have a few stray remarks to address some of the points that have been raised. First, I would like to say that municipalities are not required to have municipal courts. They choose to have municipal courts, and they might choose to have them for a variety of reasons. So, for example, they might choose to have one because they're a revenue generator or because they alleviate the caseload in circuit courts, or there could be other reasons. And we don't think that municipal courts have some luxurious budget that they're looking to spend on interpreters. We know that they don't. But our position is that if you're going to choose to have a court, then that court has to meet certain standards. And one of those standards is if there's a defendant or a witness or a victim in those courts, they have to be able to understand the nature of the proceeding. So they need to have an interpreter. Moving on to another issue, there was an issue of what do other states do. It's hard to compare state to state the rules on interpreters in municipal courts. That's for a few different reasons. So first of all, municipal courts in other states, as the justices are aware, function in slightly different ways to one another. Certain municipal courts hear certain kinds of cases. Other courts hear other kinds of cases. Also, there are some states have rules that govern municipal courts, and others leave it up to the municipal courts. On the issues of interpreters specifically, court interpreter programs vary from state to state, so it's really hard to compare the requirements for interpreters in municipal courts. But all of those caveats noted, as we said in our filings, Ohio and New Mexico and also the state of Oregon have very similar rules governing municipal courts that require interpreters to have at least a certain kind of qualification to interpret for defendants and other interested parties. Moving on to the issues regarding the survey. So we note in our filings that the survey doesn't have 100% response rate, but we still think that the survey was more than sufficient to support our observation that at least some people, and too many people, are in municipal courts today who are not being provided a qualified interpreter. They're being forced to rely on friends or family members or bystanders or judges or police officers or members of the court staff to interpret for them. We think that that's not acceptable. A quick point on language line. So just, I think there might have been some confusion. Language line costs, they do vary based on the contract and based on other factors, but based on our review, telephonic audio-only language line calls are about $1 a minute, and video calls are about $2 per minute. So per hour, that might be, to use math again, the $120 per hour for a video call.
Even I could have done that one.
We think, so on the unfunded mandate argument, it was noted that there was statutory funding for circuit courts and appellate courts when the legislature required them to use interpreters for LEP individuals. I want to observe again that the burden placed on those courts in 2007 would be far greater than the burden that our proposed statute would put on municipal courts. That's because, again, language line would satisfy the vast majority of hearings.
I don't understand what you just said. The burden, so it was funded by the legislature, but because it's not that big of a burden, we should mandate municipalities pay. Is that what you were saying?
I'm not rebutting the point that there is an unfunded mandate. I concede the point to a certain extent. Yes, we are asking municipal courts to pay for additional costs for interpreters in their courts. That I acknowledge that. But my point here is that the burden for municipal courts for this proposed statute is far less than the statutory change that occurred in 2007 that required circuit courts and appellate courts to provide interpreters to all LEP individuals. On the example, a lot of examples, helpful examples were brought up at today's hearing. On the Tajik speaker example, I just think, I don't think this is how municipal courts should function. If we stop to think about that example, we have someone who says, who seems to say that he has his brother on the phone. We don't know who that person is on the phone, where they are. We don't know the level of English proficiency that person has on the phone or what their Tajik speaking proficiency is. The court has no way to know if the person standing before them is understanding what's going on. And we don't think that's acceptable. In that case, even if Language Line says we don't have a Tajik speaker available, then I think the, you know, acknowledging that that's a difficult situation and also acknowledging that that's probably a rare situation, I think the municipal court in that instance would adjourn the case until an interpreter was identified and located.
Do you have any, I know it's not what you want. What you want is what you propose, but do you have any specific response to the Wisconsin Municipal Trial Judges Association modifications? Anything in particular about those that are you want to respond to?
We lay out our response in our we filed a response to the comments, and so we address it more in full there. But a couple of points is that the Wisconsin Municipal Judges Association, they create a category of procedures that they call procedural hearings, for which friends and family members would be allowed to interpret. And though, first of all, we think that that category of procedural hearings is not really definable. But moreover, they include as an example of a procedural hearing, they include a hearing where the defendant can waive their right to an interpreter. So effectively, you're asking them the question of whether they want to waive their right to an interpreter even before they've had a chance. That conversation itself about the waiver lacks an interpreter, and therefore they might not even understand that. So we think for that reason and for a couple other reasons we identified, we think that our petition is superior. That said, as the speakers from the Wisconsin Municipal Judges Association also noted, you know, largely we're in agreement here. I think that we have very similar goals, and their proposed statute is very similar to ours. As the director of state courts noted, as they wrote in their filings, the Department of Administration executes contracts between the court system and services like Language Line. So we'd be happy to amend our petition to say that the Department of Administration would approve other kinds of interpreter services.
Counsel, what power does this court have to order the executive branch to do anything?
I'm sorry,
power does this court have to order the executive branch to do anything?
I'm not sure how to answer that question, but I think that the Supreme Court is authorized to create procedural rules for municipal courts, and this would be a part of that rulemaking power. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Interesting petition. Appreciate each of the presenters and others who've come to participate, whether or not you actually came up to the stand. Appreciate you thinking through this and answering our questions today. The court's going to take a brief recess, and then we will reconvene to address the second rule this morning, 2403, which I suspect might be a shorter presentation than this one,
So we'll reconvene at 25-2. My guess is we will be in open conference this afternoon at 1:30. I'm just trying to give people a lay of the land so that you're not sitting here wondering, will we address this in open conference in 15 minutes or so? The courtroom wouldn't even be set up in that period of time. So if you want to go home or do whatever it is you're interested in doing, I wanted to give you a heads up sort of on the logistics of how things work. Okay? All right. With that, we're adjourned for about 10 minutes.